Chaitamrita ki.
Jai.
Shri Gaur Nitai ki.
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi. Om Agyanitamadam Dasajananjana Sarakaya Chaksula Meditam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabandantikam. Sri Chaitanya Chaitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 9 Text Number 42 It's not up there, right?
Okay.
Etavach janma sapalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranayad atardiya vacha shreyam acharanam sadha. Etavat.
Up to this.
Janma.
Janma.
Of birth. Sapalam. Perfection. Dehinam. Of every living being. Iha. In this world. Dehishu. Towards those who are embodied. Pranai. By life. Artai. By wealth. Diya. By intelligence. Vacha. By words. Shreya. Eternal good fortune. Acharanam.
Acting practically.
Sada.
Always.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. Purport. There are two kinds of general activities, shreyas, or activities with an ultimate beneficial and auspicious end, and prayas, or those which are immediately beneficial and auspicious. For example, children are very fond of playing. They don't want to go to school to receive an education. And they think that to play all day and night and enjoy with their friends is the aim of life. Even in the transcendental life of Lord Krishna, we find that when he was a child, he was very fond of playing with his friends of the same age, the cowherd boys. He would not even go home to take his dinner. Mother Yasoda would have to come out to induce him to come home. Thus, it is a child's nature to engage all day and night in play, not caring even for his health and other important concerns. This is an example of prayas, or immediately beneficial activities. But there are also shreyas, or activities which are ultimately auspicious. According to Vedic civilization, a human being must be God-conscious. He should understand what God is, what this material world is, who he is, and what their interrelationships are. This is called shreyas, or ultimately auspicious activity. In this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that one should be interested in shreyas. To achieve the ultimate goal of shreyas, or good fortune, one should engage everything, including his life, wealth, and words, not only for himself, but for others also. However, unless one is interested in shreyas in his own life, he cannot preach of shreyas for the benefit of others. This verse, cited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, applies to human beings, not to animals. As indicated in the previous verse by the words Manusa Janma, these injunctions are for human beings. Previous verse is very famous. Bharat Bhumi Tehoil Manusa Janme Jar Janma Shartika Kadi Kadapura Upakar. Prabhupada used to quote this verse in regard to the duty of the people born in India. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharat Varsa, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. Unfortunately, human beings, although they have the bodies of men, are becoming less than animals in their behavior. This is the fault of modern education. Modern educators do not know the aim of human life. They are simply concerned with how to develop the economic condition of their countries or of human society. This is also necessary. The Vedic civilization considers all aspects of human life, including dharma, religion, art, the economic development, kama, sense gratification, and moksha, liberation. But humanity's first concern should be religion. To be religious, one must abide by the orders of God. But unfortunately, people in this age have rejected religion, and they are busy in economic development. Therefore, they will adopt any means to get money. For economic development, one does not need to get money by hook or by crook. One needs only sufficient money to maintain his body and soul. However, because modern economic development is going on with no religious background, people have become lusty, greedy, and mad after money. They're simply developing the qualities of rajas, passion, and tamas, ignorance, neglecting the other quality of nature, sattva, goodness, and the brahminical qualifications. Therefore, the entire society is in chaos. The Bhagavatam says that it is the duty of an advanced human being to act in such a way as to facilitate human society's attainment of the ultimate goal of life. There is a similar verse in the Vishnu Purana, Part 3, Chapter 12, Verse 45, which is quoted in this chapter of Chaitanya Chaitamrita as verse 43. Praninam upakaraya yad eva haparataracha karmana manasavacha tadaiva batitvam vajet. By his work, thoughts, and words, an intelligent man must perform actions which will be beneficial for all living entities in this life and in the next. Sri Sikonita ki zirana pravadev supadra devi ki. Open the window a little bit more here. Panchakalpatruvas chakripashanubi pachapatitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. What is our duty? That question is asked and answered here in this verse. What is our duty? People have so many different conceptions of what they believe their duty to be, according to the particular karma which we have. Someone will think that their duty is to family or friends or society at large. And how do we fulfill that duty? Through these different means. With our life, with our wealth, with our intelligence, and with our words. And according to how much we fulfill the duty, we get results. And all of this falls within the category of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma means religious duties. Artha, economic development. Kama, sense desires. And moksha, liberation. However, here it mentions that what is the duty of every living entity? It doesn't specify you or you or you, you or me or she or he. It doesn't say what is your duty when you're 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 or 50 years old, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're Swiss or German or French or Italian. It doesn't decide or determine duty accordingly, whether you're a human being. That point is mirrored out here in the previous verse, what is the duty of a human being? But now it says, every living being. It's broadened the definition. In the previous verse, it said, manusa janma, that what is the duty of a human being? and specifically those humans who are born in Bhart Bhumi, which is India, at least localized, or if you want to take Bharat Varsha, you can say the whole planet Earth. But now the interest is expanded to cover all living beings. What is it that is their duty? To understand this, we have to understand who we are. According to the Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavinaya Sampane, Brahmana Gavani Hastane, Sunicha Ivasa Pakicha, Pandita Samadharshina. A pundit, a learned person, knows that we are not this body. When he sees some living being, whether it's a man or an animal or a tree or a fish or any type of life form, he doesn't think this is the real entity. The real entity is within the body, and that is the soul. And a person who can see that there is a common feature in all living beings, a spirit soul, that person is called wise. But that's not enough. Why? Because bhavanam janmanamante gyanamamam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. Now, the next point is one definition was for pundit, now mahatma. What is a mahatma? A mahatma is bigger than a pundit. Because a mahatma is a great soul. Now we hear of different, sometimes the title mahatma is given to a famous politician, just like Mahatma Gandhi. But we should understand that for a person to be called a mahatma, he has to be able to understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that the cause of everything is Vasudeva. Who is Vasudeva? Lord Krishna. Krishna is the cause of everything. This is the first statement of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Janma dasya jataha. The absolute truth is that from whom everything is coming. Aham sarvasa prabhavo mata sarva pravartate. Everything in spiritual, everything material is coming from that truth. And that truth is the original truth. And who is that original truth? Sri Krishna. The source of everything. Sometimes people say that Krishna was a historical person, just a famous person in history, that Krishna was a great being, maybe a powerful incarnation of God. But the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, know that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. This is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. Ete changsa kalaha pungsa Krishna stu Bhagavan swayam. Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedas, has compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the third chapter of the first canto, he has listed all the incarnations, the major incarnations, avatars of God. And when it comes to Krishna, he says, Krishna stu Bhagavan swayam. But, the word but. But. What does this but mean? As opposed to all of those who I have already mentioned, this one, Krishna, is Svayam Bhagavan. He's the original Godhead. In complete, Bhagavan, complete. He is not incomplete. He is complete in all respects. And he is not an avatar. He is avatari. He is the source of all the avatars. Therefore, we are worshipping Krishna, not by sentiment, but because of his qualification, that he is the original personality of Godhead, greater than all others. Ramadi Morteshu Kalani Yamena Tishtam Navadataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kinto Krishna Sayam Samabhavat Paramapamanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamahambhajami Rama Nishringa Vamana, and all the other avatars are coming from him. Govindam. Govindam Adi Purusham. He is the original personality, the original Purusha, the original primal enjoyer. He's Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. This is Krishna. So, welfare activity, or every living entity, rather, has a relationship with this Krishna. Because Krishna says, Everything, everyone is mine. Bijamam sarvabhutanam. I am the seed-giving father of all life, of every living entity. I am the father. Krishna's position is declared. And he says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Brahma, Purusham Shashvitam Divyam, Adi Devam Ajam Vibham. Then in the next verse he says, who? Devala, Narada. He says, persons, great sages like Devala and Narada Rishi, they're declaring this, that I am the supreme abode. I am the supreme purifier. I am the supreme Brahman. It's not our opinion. This is stated by authorities. They've all stated this fact. Even Shankaracharya, who was the founder of Mayavad philosophy, says, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda Mudha Mate. Worship Govinda. So, we are the part and parcels. What is our relationship with Krishna? We are part and Krishna is the whole. We are servants and he is the master. And how should you serve him? That depends upon your qualification. Here we see four descending degrees of how to serve Krishna. First is with your life. Pranayama. Pran means life. Life air. With life. With your life. That's the best. Or if you can't give your life, then artha. With your wealth. Because, you know, that's next to life. That's the most prized possession. Then, if you can't do that, with your intelligence. You can't do that with your words. Words are the least commitment. Intelligence is more committed. Wealth is more committed than intelligence. And if you doubt it, you'll see. If someone threatens a person to take away all their money, they'll probably be willing to think and say anything to hold on to their money. I'm sure you found that when you go on Sankirtan. Amazing how, you know, people can come up with so many explanations how to protect their wealth. They misuse their intelligence. They misuse the power of their words to explain why they should not give their wealth. Money, money, sweeter than honey. This is the mantra of the materialists. They chant this all day long. Money, money, sweeter than honey. And we also chant this. But we are not trying for that money for ourselves. We want to take the money and offer it to Krishna. So, give your words at least. Speak something on behalf of Krishna. Oh, how beautiful the deities look today. Or, someone goes out and you give them a book in the hand, right? They hold a book and they say, this is a very nice book. As soon as they say that, they're giving their words for the service of the Lord. And we can induce them to say things. We should, because this is devotional service. Here it mentions, it is the duty of every living entity to perform welfare activities, at least with their words. This is great welfare activity to appreciate a transcendental literature. And because they say something nice, the book distributor inducing them to say some good words on behalf of the books, then they get some good intelligence. Because they have satisfied the Lord, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, and then he's in the heart of every living entity, Matashmitir Ganam Apohanam Cha, Krishna gives them intelligence and remembrance. So they start to think, because you're talking to them, yes, this book is worthwhile. I would like to have it in my home. How much is this book? And then they come to the next stage. Their wealth is given. In one act of Sankirtan, at least three things are accomplished. Their words are given, their intelligence is given, and their wealth is given. You just see how the Yuga Dharma is being spread. Srila Prabhupada, of course, the Nam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma. But in the line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, under the order of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada has given most importance to book distribution, even more than Harinam, because it is expansion of Harinam. Book distribution is nothing but Harinam, because every page of these books is Harinam Sankirtan. You try and do a kirtan, you have to see how every word here, there's hundreds of thousands of words in one book. So many mantras in one book. This is we're packaging the Harinam Kirtan in the form of a book. It is like, a packaged form of Harinam Sankirtan. So Prabhupada said, for wider Sankirtan, book distribution. For wider Kirtan, book distribution. Brihat Madanga. We had so many Harinam parties going out in America, and Prabhupada said, if you want to expand the Sankirtan, do book distribution. Why? Because here you see, you go out on Harinam, someone will listen. They may or may not say so many words. They may not use their intelligence at all. They may not give any donation. But by one book, all three things are accomplished. And what else can happen with one book? Time bombs. Blows up. Big explosion happens. You take one of these books home, we've seen so many examples. This past year in America, in my Texas zone, one boy moved with his family into a new apartment, and the apartment was empty except for a box in the closet. Just a cardboard box, and inside the box was a Bhagavad Gita. Big explosion. He came and joined. Read the book, changed his life. And this is a story that's repeated again and again. Who left the book? Only God knows. Krishna alone will know. The previous people that were there had no use for the book. They left the book there because that book had this boy's name written on it. Every book has somebody's name written on it. We don't have the eyes to read that writing. But you should know it. You've got a box of books, and every book is already autographed. It's already... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu already has someone's name written on it. It would be great if we could learn to read that writing. Just look at the person's name, and then you can, But then it would be confusing. We'd have to ask everybody this. Are you Mr.? It's a fact, though. These books have the people's names written on them. Just like they say, every germ has somebody's name written on it. If someone is worrying about getting sick, then the other people say, don't worry about it, Unless the germ has your name on it, you won't get sick. The books have people's names on them. And the devotee has to give. And what is the result? They can also give their life, because these books make people surrender. Prabhupada was talking once about these books, and he had me read the book of another scholar. And after a while, I was getting a headache. The book was all about Lord Chaitanya. I was starting to get a headache. Prabhupada wanted to know if we should distribute this book. So I said, I'm getting a headache. Prabhupada said, yes. Mental gymnastics. That's what he called it, mental gymnastics. I felt like I had just gone through a gymnasium workout with my mind. But Prabhupada's book's different. It's like a very nice, cool oasis, Nice place with swans and palm trees, and pure water, soothing breeze. It just pulls away all the anarthas from the heart. It makes one want to surrender. It's so warm invitation to come to Krishna. Every page is personal all about the glories of Krishna, just like Prabhupada has slipped in here a nice little lila. Krishna, when a child, did not like to go home to eat. Krishna appears to be a typical young child. Children like to play, Krishna liked to play. Children don't like to go to school, Krishna didn't like to go to school. You can see they couldn't get him to go to school until he was 16 years old. I mean, he really did like to play. No school until 16. There's a nice lila place in Braj called Hau Bilau. You know about this place, Hau Bilau? One day, Mother Yasoda had cooked for Krishna. Krishna was out with his cowherd friends, tending the cows and calves. And he was so much enjoying playing that he could not be induced to come home. Mother Rohini, the mother of Balaram, she went out begging Krishna, Balaram, please come home. Your mother is waiting for you, Krishna. Your father is sitting down at the table. They kept playing. They just left. Finally, Yasoda Ma herself went out. And she tried to convince her naughty son, please come home to eat. You're getting very weak and thin. What will people say? That you don't even have a home. You don't get taken care of properly. Then Mother Yasoda thought, and I will get him this way. She said, you know, have you heard about the house? Krishna said, no. So there's a great fearful demon called the Hau. Very long pointed teeth. Horrible looking face. And he specializes in devouring young children. Krishna's eyes were going bigger and bigger and bigger. And bigger hearing this story. And suddenly Mother Yasoda let out a huge shriek. And she started to run as fast as she could back home. Shouting, Hau, Hau, that's the Hau. And Krishna and Balaram ran full speed after her all the way back home. So that place where Mother Yasoda got Krishna to come back is called Hau Bilau. So such pastimes are always going on between Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends. And Prabhupada has slipped this in to let us know that that person that we're supposed to surrender to is not something impersonal. God is everywhere, God is everything, you're God, I'm God. No. God is a supreme person. But we don't find that in his Vrindavan mood, Krishna's supremacy is visible. He covers his supremacy. In most places, in most religions, how is God worshipped? God is great, God is great, God is great, and I am very nothing at all. Very small. God is great and I am small. Awe and reverence. Fear. If you don't do this, God will strike you dead. Some religions teach like that. Or other religions say, God is love. It's another opposite of, you know, the fear. God is love. But what do we say? God is a cowherd boy. And what kind of coward boy? A very pet son of his mother. If his mother plays with him, he'll do anything for his mother. So many nice pastimes. Krishna and Balaram. You know the pastime? Krishna was being very naughty. And Mother Yasoda was making the pot of milk. And suddenly the milk boiled over, and what happened? Mother Yasoda put Krishna down and ran to turn down, to get the stove, the pot off the stove. At that moment, Krishna became very angry. And so he did so many naughty things, broke some butter pots and milk and other things. And then he ran away. And Mother Yasoda immediately thought, I must teach this naughty boy a lesson. So she chased and chased and chased and ran after Krishna. And finally, when she caught up with him, she tried to bind him with a rope, bound him up with a rope. But every time she tried to do this, what did she find? The rope was short by this much, 2 fingers' length, 2 widths of the fingers' length. Binding, 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 binding. And finally she got some extra cloth. And with that little piece of cloth, she could do it. How? It means that Krishna was bound by his mother's love. He wanted to show his mother, no one can bind me by ordinary means. By my love, you have bound me. So then Krishna was bound up with rope, and the rope was attached to a grinding mortar, a big mortar. And Krishna pulled this mortar while, like a little child, he kneeled down and, moving on all fours, went between 2 huge trees, and the mortar got stuck between the trees. And Krishna pulled, and even though these trees were very big and Krishna was very small, the trees fell down. 2 huge demigods came out of the trees. They offered obeisances, went back to their abodes. These were the Jamalarjun trees, great devotees of the Lord. You know, these demigods eventually became the maid servants of the Lord. In the spiritual sky, they were delivered for this. But anyway, Krishna was still tied up. And all the cow and all of his friends saw this. And they all reported to the parents, "We saw these demigods, we saw these demigods, you can't believe what happened." They didn't know if this was true or not. But then Nandamar saw what happened. "Krishna, how did you get tied up like this?" Krishna said, you know, he wouldn't speak. He was so upset. Because he was left there tied up like this for quite a long time. "Did your mother do this?" And Krishna went. So then Nandamarja untied Krishna and said, "Now you come home." Krishna didn't want to go home. "I'm not going to go home." "Why don't you want to go home?" Because he was upset with his mother. So Nandamarja said, "All right. You stay with me." And he was also upset. Nandamarja was very upset. "Why did my wife do this? To tie up my son in this way is a very cruel thing. An animal should be tied up, but not my son." So both of them were very upset. They were sitting there. And Krishna refused to do anything. He just sat on the lap of Nandamarja and he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't do anything. He just sat there. They tried to cook for him. He wouldn't eat. Finally, Nandamarja didn't know what to do. And this whole time, Yasoda Devi began to cry. Seeing how Krishna was neglecting her, she was crying and crying and crying. And Krishna wouldn't do anything with her. He wouldn't go to her. He wouldn't eat from her cooking. Wouldn't take milk from her breast. Nothing. Nandamarja tried to get others to cook. Krishna wouldn't agree. So this was going on for a long time. And Yasoda became so pained in separation that she began to lose her life. And Balaram's mother Rohini finally went and told Krishna that if you don't forgive your mother, then she may leave her body. When Krishna heard this, the tears started to come in his eyes, and he became choked up, and suddenly he jumped out of his father's arms and ran to his mother and held on to his mother with all his strength. And they were crying back and forth, the child and his mother. This is Krishna. This is our conception of God. So personal. He's God. He could pull down the trees, even though he's a small child. He could kill a witch like Putana, even though she could kill so many others. He could lift a mountain with the small finger of his left hand and hold it for 7 days and 7 nights. He's God, no doubt. But does anyone think that he's God? And does he think that he's God? And does he show that he's God? No. It's all concealed by his special Yogamaya potency. She helps him, Lila Shakti. She arranges the pastimes of the Lord so that everyone simply thinks, Krishna is my son. This is called mamata. Mamata means myness. And the more the sense of mine, Krishna is mine, comes within the heart of the devotee, the more the love for Krishna goes up. Normally we think, I belong to God. I am a servant of God. But slowly, slowly, by the process of Krishna consciousness, we'll think, Krishna is ours. That's what the cowherd friends think. Krishna is mine. Krishna, you want to wrestle? I defeated you yesterday, and again I will pin you down and defeat you. And Mother Yasoda's thinking that Krishna is mine, and if I don't feed him and look after him, he'll starve. And the gopis deal with Krishna just like a puppet on a string. Dance like this, play your flute like this, and Krishna does anything they order. This is mamata. Possessiveness. But in our position, if we think like this, we have to first qualify ourselves. So this is called the fifth occupational activity. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Moksha means liberation, or as it is said in Christianity, salvation. Are we interested in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha? We want that fifth thing. What is that fifth thing? Love for Krishna. Krishna Prema. Prema Dharma. That is the fifth goal. Prema Pumartha Mahan. Liberation. Mukti Mukulitan Jati Sevate Sman. Liberation is simply waiting at the door of bhakti. One who is a bhakta is automatically liberated. We don't care for liberation. Dharma. What is the dharma of the Brijbasis? The Brijbasis' dharma is, Mother Yasoda's dharma is to put on tilak on Krishna's body and say all of the protective mantras for his health. The dharma of Nanda Maharaj is to look after all his cows, look after the village. The artha comes from the treasury of Nanda Maharaj, which he uses simply for the service of Krishna. The calm is seen in the mood of the gopis, their loving feelings for Krishna, and the senses of all the residents of Vrindavan, which are totally satisfied when beholding Krishna. And what is that moksha? Moksha means to have no other thought but Krishna. This is dharma, artha, and kama moksha for the Brijbasis. It's totally different than what we understand as dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So being, as Prabhupada says in this verse, not to